He said 49. Thank you. side. Four. Chris's mom. Forgotten about you at one month. I'll get to you afterwards. 1 month. 30 days. 29. 28. 27. 26. 25. 24. 23. 22. 26. Where's the one with 22 days? Just so we know. Oh, okay. 21. 20, 19, 18, 17, 16. 15, 14, 13, I love this part, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, seven, six, five, four, three, well, what if someone beat you? 2, 1. Where's our three? But before, I just want to thank all the, will all the Al-Anon stand while they're getting up to the stage? Will all the Al-Anon here stand, please? Thank you. And now Pat's going to present the big book to this embarrassed gentleman.
Hey, my name's Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. When I come up here, I see that in the back of his T-shirt here, it says, I believe, do you? It's a great honor to be up here, and to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm getting dressed tonight, and the wife put out a shirt, and I'm saying, people will think it's a fancy shirt. It's to hide the stains when you're eating. That's what it's about. No, this is a great honour, and it's great to see this young man start his life. This is the best day of your life, believe it or not.
We're going to start the meeting. Can we have a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer, please? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad you're all here, especially the newcomers. In keeping with our singleness of purpose and our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for membership is desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. Is there anyone present who's in there? Well, we went through this, so I'm not doing it again. Unless it's somebody that absolutely positively has to introduce themselves. Alrighty then. Anybody from out of town? More than two bridges? Alrighty. Hillary? Alright, Hillary is here and she's going to read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Hillary and I'm an alcoholic. The preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And then Adam is going to read the steps.
Adam, alcoholic. Let me find the steps. Okay. So here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him.
4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And Pete with announcements.
Hello, I'm Pete and I'm an alcoholic. Hey. Woo, we clean up good. I was told I've got to hold them like this, you know, fancy like. Hey, first thing I want to say is we've got a lot of people here tonight, and you may be sitting next to me and think you're whispering. If everybody's whispering, please respect the speaker, and if you find someone whispering next to you, punch them. First of all, 30th Annual Tampa Bay Fall Roundup is going to be at the Sheraton, and that's going to be September 2nd through Monday, September 5th. And if you want more information, we have flyers about that. Treasure Island Steppers 6th Anniversary Dinner, Friday, September 16th. Speaker is Roger 8, and they're having banana pudding. So, you know, two good things. District 15 is looking for any members to fill these service positions. District Chair, Chair Vance, Coordinator, Secretary, Registers, Treasurer, DCM, all of them. So there is going to be, positions will be voted on April 18th business meeting, and that's going to be at, what'd I say? I'm going to learn to read next month. October 18th business meeting at, and that, is that down at District?
Central Office.
Central Office, yeah, okay. 6:30. In fact, here's another one. First gratitude, what's that? Yeah. First gratitude dinner planning meeting is going to be Thursday, August 18th at 6:30, and that's also at Central Office, so make sure you're going to be doing that. And we also need support for Hoot and Holler Tuesday at 8 p.m. at Central Office, Two for One's Women Sunday, 7 p.m. in Spirit of Life Church. The treatment committee needs help. It meets second Tuesday of every month at Central Office at 6:30. Also need volunteers at BayCare Sunday morning, 10 a.m. and ACT on the second Friday of the month at 8 p.m. Also, the Keep It Simple women's group meets here at noon on Tuesdays, and so that's a great meeting. Show up for that. And we have the Old Timers AA History Workshop supporting Dr. Bob Powell. Saturday, January 28th at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Christ the King Church. And there's flyers on that. I see Cheryl over there. She's got all kinds of information. Thank you for a great evening.
Alrighty, if you could please make sure your cell phones are silenced at this time. And if we ask if you can refrain from getting up, moving about while the speaker is sharing, the less distraction. We're really crowded, so if you start moving around, the person next to you starts moving around, and then the whole room's dancing. Please do not smoke in front of the building. Please go across the street to the parking lot. And just look around your chair before you leave. Pick up anything that looks like it might be garbage and throw it away. We are guests of the church, and we like to be respectful. I'm introducing our first speaker tonight. Her and her husband were riding around. They had nothing to do. And they said, hey, I hear there's a speaker meeting up at Newport Richey. So we love the countdown, and our speaker's going to run over. So please stay. She's got a wonderful message. And I'd like to introduce Sandy from the Borderline Big Book Study Group in Port Charlotte.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. She scared me when she said the first speaker. I said, uh-oh. I'm going, nobody told me there was two. How much time do I have, you know? I want to thank the committee for asking me, and I want to thank Chris for making the phone call. You know, I'm always, it always amazes me how funny my God is. You know, every time I'm like having the worst day ever, somebody like Chris will call, hey, come speak. You know, I'm going, okay, I can, you know, I'm having a crappy day. I can just go share that with a newcomer and just give them much, you know, things to look forward to, you know. And it never fails. And then when I say yes, and I get in the car, I get the blessings. You know, we got to come over the big bridge. That's my first time. And, you know, and I enjoy that. And I get here and I see people I've seen before. You know, and I find out AA is a real small place. You know, and I'm grateful for that because I come here and I'm scared because I'm around a bunch of strangers and I'm sitting there with Wendell. I said, I got to get up and move, you know. So I start moving and shaking hands, you know, because that's what I do. That's what y'all have taught me to do. Introduce myself, you know. Don't make it about me. Make it about others. The committee has done a wonderful job with this. Let's give them a round of applause. It takes a lot of work to put these on, and there's just a lot of effort put into that, and it is greatly appreciated by all of us, and the turnout is just amazing. I didn't come here for all that. I come here to keep from going to prison. I didn't know, you know. I come to one day, you know, and the cops are knocking on my door, and that wasn't no big deal at my house because I lived in that kind of neighborhood. And they were always looking for the neighbor, though. But this time they were looking for me. They shoved me in a chair and just went through my house like I've seen them do on TV, and they found what they were looking for. They had me charged with 3 counts with possession with intent to distribute. And I couldn't tell them that all that was mine. And I couldn't tell them that that's what I took when I stayed up drinking all night. You know, and I couldn't tell them that that gun they found was what I used to protect me from hobos when I stayed up and had to go to work and all that kind of stuff. They had it, you know, illegal possession of a firearm, you know. I'm going, jeepers. So they were busy in the house, and I know I couldn't go to jail looking like I was looking, so I flipped down the hall to find some pants to put on. And they just looked up and noticed I was missing. Don't do that. They hunt you with guns. And they found me. I was getting my pants off the clothesline because I knew I couldn't go to jail dressed like I was dressed. And they took me to jail, and I sit there. And that's not the first time I've been in jail, but I think it was the longest time I've been in jail, and it was the scariest time for me because I got busted back before getting busted was fashionable, and you actually went to prison for doing that. And I was scared. You know, today I know that I took step one on that jail cell bed. I didn't know it then. I just knew that I was in a crack, and I didn't know how I could make, maneuver, or wiggle my way out, you know, and I was in serious trouble. I didn't have money to get out of jail. I didn't have money to post a bond. So I kept talking to the deputies. I hope they would, you know, call him in case she was home to come get me out of jail, because she didn't like it when I called. She got really upset, you know. And so I finally, about the 5th day there, I got the deputy to call him in case she was home, and he come and he got me out of jail. I didn't go home and take a shower. I went straight to the bar to see if I was missed, and you know I was. You know, they had already heard what happened to me. I lived in a small town. And I'm going to tell you, I drank free all night that night. They were happy to see me, and I was happy to see that beer. Because, I mean, I was in trouble, and I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I had been drinking with a particular friend. I mean, we would go out, and we would just have the best time ever. And he went off somewhere, and he'd come back and talking in half sentences. And, you know, I didn't know where he'd been, but after I got out of jail, he was at my front door. You know, we would try to get him to go have a beer with us. He said, oh, I'm not drinking one day at a time. We said, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. You know, and we'd go on off. And we'd be working and something happened. He said, oh, just let go and let God. Let go and let God do what? You know, we couldn't figure it out. He was talking in half sentences. Nobody liked being around him. He wasn't fun no more. And here he is at my door. Well, I'd been sipping that morning, and in Georgia, if you're drinking beer, you're sipping. If you're drinking liquor, you're drinking. So I was sipping, and I had me a good little buzz going, and here he is, and I can sit up with anything when I'm sipping, and I got a little buzz going, and here he is, and he's talking to me, and he said, I know how you can get your job back. I said, sign me up. I didn't know. He signed me up for treatment. You know, I didn't know. I was one of those people that come to in the middle of the night and saw the missions on TV. I'd never heard of treatment. I never knew anybody that had been to treatment. I just knew he was weird after he come back from wherever he was, and, you know, and he said he could get my job back, so I'm ready. And he said it might look good in front of the judge when you get your sentence for you going to prison. So sign me up twice, right? I didn't know you could go to treatment all tore up. He didn't tell me that. So I'm on the front stoops of my trailer, and I look like I'm a schoolgirl going to a class. I got my Piggly Wiggly sack pack, and my jeans are pressed, and I'm sitting there, my legs are crossed, I'm smoking a cigarette, and I'm waiting on the bus. Now, the bus was an AA man and an Al-Anon woman. Yeah. The AA man had already paid me a visit, him and two other older men, and, you know, I thought they were... Today I know they were trying to 12-step me. Back then I just thought they were being dirty old men telling all them stories, you know, that they couldn't share because everybody else had done hurt them and don't laugh in appropriate places and all that. But today I know they were trying to 12-step me. So, you know, I mean, I'm from the South. I'm polite, and I nod, and I smile, and these people are crazy. And I was thinking they should have kept it to themselves. They should have told nobody that story. You know, I mean, you know how we do. We make up stuff, but it really happened to them. And I said, man, y'all should have shared that. You know, well, here I am getting in the car with him and her. And we get on the road, and I mean, I have to drive like 2 hours to go to treatment. I didn't know it was that far. And the further down the road we got, the more this Al-Anon lady started talking about what all was involved in treatment and sobriety and all that kind of stuff. And I'm thinking, I have overreacted. Because she's talking about not ever drinking again. Ever. Ever. Not anything. Not sipping, not drinking, not nothing. Not wine, not nothing. And I'm going, do people actually live like that? I mean, you know. And she told me I couldn't smoke none of them cigarettes no more. And I'm going, either my left-handed kind. I know I've overreacted now, because if I wasn't sipping, I'm smoking. And the more she talked, the scarier I got. And by the time we got down to that treatment place, I was a nervous wreck. I was crying, and, you know, she had a hold of me. I'm a size 16 now. When I went to treatment, I was cutting. I was a size 7. So, I mean, half the size I am now. Still had that height, but I wasn't nothing but breasts and breeches. And I'm going to tell you, that woman had a hold of them bones, and she was rattling them around, and she wasn't letting them go. Because, I mean, I was shaking worse than I was when I got up here to speak in front of y'all. And I was scared to death, because I could not imagine what living a life without drinking or smoking or doing anything else ever again would be like. I mean, how would you have fun? How would you have friends? I mean, I couldn't even... How would you have sex? I mean, how could you do anything not sipping or drinking or smoking? I mean, I didn't get it. And she's talking all that stuff, and I'm scared to death. And she's got a hold of me because she knows that she let go. I'm running. She didn't let go. She's a little bitty Al-Anon lady, and I'm going to tell you, those women where I got sober, tough as nails, and that AA man went off, and I guess he signed me up for treatment. I don't know where he went, but she had a hold of me, and she walked me down the hall about... It looked longer than this, but it was a long haul, and, you know, we got down to the end, and she opened up them double doors and kind of pushed me through, you know, and then they closed, which wasn't no big deal, except I didn't have no door handle on my side. So I'm up there plastered against that window, and I don't cry pretty, I blow snot, my cheeks turn red, I mean, I am a mess, my makeup runs, because I dressed up to go to treatment. I had no idea. I'm plastered up against that door. And that woman just kept right on walking down that hall. She didn't turn around and look back or nothing. I hated Al-Anon. Those were mean women. And she just walked right on and up. I got in the room that day and the lady come in to do the entry exam or whatever they fill out. I don't know what it was. All that paperwork and she probably asked me a lot of questions and I'm fixing to go to prison and I'm in trouble and she's wanting to know about all the stuff I do and I ain't telling her everything because I'm not stupid, right? That's incriminating evidence. But I tell her enough so she's filling her little blank. And she said, honey, she said, you don't ever have to feel the way you're feeling inside ever again unless you choose to. You know what? I don't know why, but I believed her. I don't know what in me had happened that shift had changed and I didn't want to feel the way I was feeling inside ever again. Because I had always wanted to be over there with them doing, I hated who I was. I come out to shoot 6 foot tall and it's good when you're old, but when you're young and when you're six, seven, and eight, you're in the back of the picture line, your feet hit the room before you see anything like a body. And you're just awkward and lanky and no boobs and no butt. And I hated it. I hated it. I hated who I was. And when I drank, it made me different. It made me feel like you looked. And I wanted that all my life. And then she's telling me that that they can fix that. I had a solution. It was alcohol and drugs for me. She left me with that. And I'm sure she said other stuff that day, but I just don't remember much of it. I'm signed up in treatment. I do that little deal. And then when I get ready to get out, they don't want me to get out. They want me to go to a halfway house. And I'm concerned about that. And they said I'm not quite ready to go home yet. And I don't know what that was. But the problem I had is that the halfway house that they wanted to put me in was just had women in it. I didn't like women. I didn't like women. I mean, I've always grown up with a big pack of boys. I mean, I never hung out with a bunch of women. They were the enemy or they were, they were backstabbing bees and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't want nothing to do with them. Thank you. So here we go to treatment with a bunch of women. Woo-hoo. And they have rules in that place. You have to travel together like a pack of ducks. Nobody can go by themselves. They won't let you. And you have to wear all your clothes. I don't even have the clothes they want me to wear. I don't know about y'all when y'all were drinking, but when I'm drinking, stuff gets... I get drunk, number one, I can't wiggle back in all that crap. And if I try to get wiggle in, I get 2 feet and one leg, and then I fall. And then it just hell getting up. And I just quit wearing it. Too much trouble. Just too much trouble. So now they want me to wear it again. I'm going, oh my gosh. We got trouble. Got trouble. I don't have it. And when I'm up here in front of y'all, and I look like I got good sense, and I am properly dressed with all my clothes, I remember that day. Because I had to tell that women, because they won't let you go by yourself, that I didn't know what size underwear I wore. And those women, they didn't laugh at me that day. They shoved me in a dressing room, and they bought me panties to try on. And isn't that what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous with us? When I let my pride and my ego out of the way and say, hey, bud, you know what? I don't know how to do this. Will you help me? You always do. But it's ego deflation at depth for me. And it is not easy. It's not fun. But I always get the blessings from that. I found out in that halfway house through a series of first-time inventories that I did that the women that I hated wasn't my enemies. I thought they were doing to me what I was doing to them. And that's the reason I didn't like them. Because they wasn't to be trusted. I wasn't to be trusted. They lied. I lied. They stole. I stole and I thought they did, and I didn't know that's what I was doing. I didn't have any idea. So in that halfway house too, I forgave that Al-Anon, when they got me in the steps now, I'm just getting spiritual. So I forgive that Al-Anon for shoving me through that door. And I ask her if she'll sponsor me. because where I got sober, you could fit in this room. You know, it wasn't a big place. I think Georgia Jim knows about the area where I got sober. And it's a little place called Fitzgerald. There was one meeting a week there. One meeting a week. There wasn't a meeting every time you opened up the doors like it is now. You know, and there wasn't a lot of women staying sober. So the AA man that took me to treatment and the Al-Anon woman that went rode with him, they double-teamed me when I got out of that treatment center. The Al-Anon lady told me when they picked me up from treatment after I got out, she said, now, if you can't, you know, if you need us, you call us. Well, you know how I do. I don't pick up the phone. I'll pace the floor. I'll pace the floor thinking because I'm waiting on the meeting time, right? Because they let me out the day of the meeting. We had one meeting a week. It met on Monday. So they let me out on Monday. They come and got me, and this Al-Anon lady said, now, you know, you got a couple of hours. If you want to just come on to the house with us, you can. I said, oh, no, I'll be fine. I just need some time to relax. And I'm pacing the floor because I don't know what to do with myself. I'm scared to death. I'm home my first time. I think people are going to come and get me and take me, get me drunk. You know, all my friends, the one that didn't bring me cigarettes when I was in jail, didn't come see me, hadn't heard from since I've been off to treatment. And, you know, those friends, those are the ones I was concerned about. And I'm pacing the floor, and I go to the phone and pick it up. It only weighs 100 pounds. I can't hardly lift it. And, oh, they're probably busy with supper. And I put it back down, and I pace some more. And I pick it back up again to call, and, oh, well, they're probably doing dishes, you know. It's only like another hour and a half for the meeting. I'll be fine. I'll pace some more. And I still go by, and I pick that phone up again. Still weighing 100 pounds, but I dialed her. I said, I am just crazy. Can you come get me early? Because I don't have a car at this time. And you know what? That she turned off her stove and she come got me. At least she let me sit in their house. You know? And I wasn't to be trusted. You know? I could not believe that Al-Anon lady would let me go to a meeting by myself with her husband. Unattended. Y'all know what I'm talking about. You know, I hear a lot of things in the rooms. I hear, you know, oh, I can't love you until I love myself and all this other kind of crap. What happened for me is they trusted me until I became trustworthy. They loved me and showed me I was lovable. They did for me that made me believe that I was worth doing for. That's how that worked in my life. Yeah, I didn't sit at home waiting on it, you know. Y'all demonstrated that to me. And that's what I believe happens. Because we would go to the grocery store and she would leave her pocketbook open with her wallet and I could see the money in it. I don't know where y'all come from, but where I come from, you didn't do that and it'd still be there when you got back. But she did that and I wouldn't have touched that for nothing in the world because she trusted me. You know, and that's how the trust in myself develops. We're still traveling around like a big pack of ducks. Everybody that's sober in this little town would get meet at one guy's house and we'd all go to the meeting. We'd have the meeting in the car, we'd have the meeting there, and then we'd have the meeting coming home. Where I'd ask all them questions, you know, I didn't know what they were talking about in the meeting, but I wasn't going to let them know in the meeting I didn't know. You know, I just come out of treatment, you know, I am spiritual. I had a lot of answers. There was this old guy in the meeting, I think one of them, he's kind of like the guy that stood up tonight and got that long timer chip. When I got out of treatment, I was an alcoholic and an addict. So every time somebody called on me, my name's Sandy, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. He goes, yeah, I got hemorrhoids too. What's that got to do with it? I hated him. He didn't care how many people were at that meeting. He didn't care if it was birthday night and it was 12 or just home group members with the four of us. He'd scream about his stupid hemorrhoids, you know? He told me how to pray. I prayed every week he would die. He had to drive 30 minutes to come to the meeting. I prayed every week that he'd have a record die on the way to the meeting. And you know what? He showed up every week. I mean, he never missed a week. You know, and that's about the principles before personalities. He taught me that lesson, too. That son of a gun wasn't going to take my chair. And I cussed him a lot. I'm going to tell you, I don't know about y'all, but when I come through those doors, every second word, I had two words in a whole paragraph that wasn't a cuss word, you know? So, I mean, and I would let him roll on that joker. He just smiled. I thought he wanted some of this. In fact, I offered it to him one time. He said, honey, he said, I want you sober. I don't want in your pen. And I cussed him out. I was offended. That's the kind of people I got sober with. They cared about my sobriety and not anything else. You know, and I am forever grateful that I had those old cusses in my life. But finally, I pulled somebody aside and asked him about this hemorrhoid stuff, because I'm tired of hearing about his hemorrhoids. You know, he just needs to go have them fixed. So I asked somebody, and they said, well, Sandy, here's the deal. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, you say you're anything else other than an alcoholic, you're saying that you're different from us. Now, and that's fine, but if you're different from us, what we do here might not work for you. Why don't you get in that book and see if you can identify with Bill's story, how he failed, how he drank something, and become an alcoholic, you know? Because back then, I got sober in 1983 in this little small town. There wasn't any NA meetings. There wasn't all this counseling stuff. I mean, there was Alcoholics Anonymous, and there was jail, and then there was enough wards. I mean, there wasn't a lot of choices. And so I got Bill's story, and I started reading. You know, he talks about stealing. You know, he talks about wanting to kill himself and not having the guts to. He talks about drinking and taking other things. And he talks about that hopelessness that he felt, you know. And I didn't know, and before you get to Bill's story, they talk about it, about that restless, irritable, and discontented feeling inside. Now, I had that all my life, and when I took a drink, it leveled out. And if I was home by myself, I'd go get me a bottle of liquor, and then I would go out the door, and then whatever happened, happened. And whatever I took, I took, and whatever you gave me, I take. So, you know, because liquor gets you there quicker, right? So that's what I wanted anyway. I just wanted to change the way I felt. So I could identify myself as an alcoholic at that point. So I go back to the meeting. I'm an alcoholic now. Y'all turned me into one. So I go back and my name's Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. And you know what? I didn't hear nothing about those stupid hemorrhoids. I didn't know I had the power to cure them, but obviously I did. About that time, it was time for a group conscience against this old guy. We called a secret group conscience, but we didn't tell him. Because he was running off newcomers with stuff like he would do with me. You know, one time I was in there whining, one time, and he got me in the kitchen, and he put a $5 bill in my face. He said, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, let me be the first one to buy you a drink. And he'd throw $5 at me. It made me mad, and I'd cuss my way out of that kitchen, you know, and I'd go sit down in my seat, and I'd shut up. You know, and he would do stuff like that, not only to me, but to other newcomers. So we were tired of that. He was running them off, so we got the secret group conscience going, and we're going to have somebody go talk to him. Yeah. Well, the oldest member of the group was nominated, and he had about five years sobriety at that time. And I'm going to tell you, he went over there and talked to that man. I don't know what was said, but he come back with his tail between his legs. We never know what went on, and he never visited again, and nobody ever said anything else about this guy and what he did to newcomers. You know, so I'm group conscious, you know, it works. So we just started a new meeting without him. Didn't invite him. There was about five of us. We were so spiritual, we were just floating off, right? You know what? It's a wonder we didn't get drunk. I mean, I was so self-righteous and so self-centered and so just, it was just bad. And about the seven people that did that, I'm still the only one that goes to meetings. Everybody else is taking just different paths. You know, some of us don't survive that, you know, and it was hard. So we're riding around all over the world in these meetings, and and there's a guy, and I go to winking and blinking at him, and we go on an AA date. Yeah, somebody's been on one. Newcomers, let me tell you about these AA dates. Okay, he come and got me, and when I got sober, the meetings were at 8 o'clock, and there was a little small town with nothing left open to eat, a restaurant or anything, so we had dinner before the meeting. And then we'd go to the meeting, and then he would bring me home, and he would leave. I didn't see the point in a AA date. You know, when you're on the stoop, you don't know whether to kiss or close with the Lord's Prayer. So we had several of these AA dates. So I'm talking to my Al-Anon lady because she has all the answers about what girls do and how they should act and all that kind of stuff. And she was a gardener, and we're in the garden, and I'm digging potatoes, and I'm slinging dirt, and I'm cussing. Because he ain't wanting none of this, he ain't touching nothing that ain't his, and I'm mad. You know, because I am now sober, and everything's alive. Everything is alive. And it's killing me, you know. So I'm slinging dirt, and I'm cussing, and I'm asking her what's wrong with him and me and the world and God and everything else. And I'm going to tell you what, if you ain't sponsoring people, you are missing out on cheap entertainment. I do not know how that woman kept a straight face that day in the potato patch, but she damn sure did. And I asked her, I said, what is wrong with him? He ain't going to name that fire. She said, well, honey, maybe he's just trying to show you some respect. Respect. Lord help us. The type of respect I wanted was when he'd stay the night and call me the next day. That's kind of respect I wanted. I didn't want any of that respect or that stuff she was talking about. But you know what? I didn't know. So this guy asked me to marry him, and he kind of knew about me, and you know, we walked down the aisle, and we had been traveling all over the southeast of Georgia going to meetings, and y'all were all there. That Al-Anon lady took my $50, and I mean, she had cakes like you make at our reception and stuff. I mean, they just had more food, and y'all were all there. You know, and y'all supported us because we were the AA couple. You know, after we got married, if it was a 12-step call come through, we'd turn off the stove and we'd go out the door and no questions asked. We didn't, you know, it wasn't this, well, I just got home from work and, oh, I'm tired and it's after 9 o'clock and I don't drive at night and la la. You know, all that crap we hear today, it wasn't none of that. I mean, alcoholic out the door, period. No questions asked. And that's the way I was raised and that's the way I am today. we were married about 5 years and what happened is, I wasn't honest. I tried to make his God my God. I was trying to do things his way, and that wasn't that he was pushing it on me. I just wasn't honest with myself and tried to develop my own spirituality. I tried to do everything the way he did it, and I got lost in all that. So what happened for me and what happened for me a lot back then is I swung out on another man. You know, and I come back to this little small town, and everybody knew about it, and they called me a whore, and I couldn't go back to AA no more because I'd had an affair. And they took sides, and they wasn't mine. You know, 5 years sober, I can't go to AA. 5 years sober, I know that drinking is not an option, and I'm ready to kill myself because I can't go back to AA. You know, thank goodness for Narcotics Anonymous, I was able to attend those meetings. I respected those meetings, and, you know, I said I was an addict when I was there. They didn't know me, they didn't ask about me, and it was a safe place. And the old guy that I cured, I hadn't seen him in a long time because we started another meeting, you know, and he just, you know, we just went our separate ways. And if you'd give me 5 minutes, I'd tell you what an SOB he was and how bad he treated newcomers and all that kind of stuff. And during this, you know, I'm sitting there on the bed this particular day, and I can't go to AA, and I got this pistol that I finally got back from all this court stuff, and, you know, I'm just going to kill myself. I'm just going to kill myself, and I think about him. You know, and back then nobody had cell phones, and I knew his number off the top of my head. That was one thing they made you do, is remember your sponsor's phone number. you know, I knew it by heart. I could tell you what it is today. And I called him, you know, and I'm blowing snot, crying, not pretty again, and, you know, and he said, "Who is this?" And I told him who it was. He said, "Can you drive?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, get in the car." For the first 2 years of my sobriety, I thought getting in the car was step one. "Sandy, you're going tonight? Where are we going?" "Oh, hell, just get in the car." "Step one, okay, pick me up," you know, and that's what we did. So I got in the car and I drove over there, and, you know, and that man met me on the stoop and of his front porch, and he had his hands just open, and I just fell with him. You know, the one thing I know about this old guy is he loved an alcoholic, and he knew how to treat an alcoholic. You know, he knew how to bring about that recovery. You know, he knew about the bottoms. He said, "Honey," he said, "there's a bottom that brings you here, and then there'll be a bottom you'll hit that'll keep you here." And, you know, he used to talk a lot about that, you know, and it was all that half sentences, nobody made sense, and just stupid stuff that old-timers say, you know, but he told me one time, "You keep fishing in the same pond, you're gonna keep getting the same fish." I'm looking around, I said, "I ain't said nothing about no fishing pole. I ain't said. Now, I was dating a new guy, is what this was. But that's the half sentences they talk to you. So this guy, him and his wife, they put me in their back pocket, and he allowed me to work the tape table with him. And he taped all over the Southeast and stuff. And I heard a guy from California talk about sitting in a room with two of his ex-wives. And I guarantee I talked to him after that meeting, and he taught me about principles before personalities. Because if this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life depends on me being able to come here, his life might depend on whether he's able to come here. And if I'm over here bad-mouthing him or trying to pick sides and all this other kind of stuff, is that a place that he'll feel welcome?" So I started praying to God to take me to a different place with that, and I wanted to make amends to him and all that. So I am like the district secretary at this point, and we're in a district meeting, and anybody who's done service, you know how they are, kind of like the meeting tonight. Everybody's chattering and laughing and giggling, sharing stories, and then here he comes in the door. I mean, a quiet fill over that room like you wouldn't believe. Because they knew what happened. Everybody knew what happened. I live in a small town. I mean, they know everything. And I got sober in front of y'all. Everybody knows everything. So he come in, and I'm going, "Oh, God, not today." You know, I wanted to make amends in private, you know, alone, not in front of everybody. But I got up out of my chair, and I walked across the room, and I set my hand out, and I said, "I'm glad you're here." I didn't say I was glad to see him there, because I wasn't. I was glad he was there, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we just got to make it. We've got to get these principles and these personalities out of the way where an alcoholic can come here and be safe and get sober. I did not wind up going to prison. I took first offender's probation. I got to tell you a story about that. You know, Al-Anon, they are like fashionistas, right? So my lawyer told me that I need to wear a dress to court. Well, I didn't have a dress. I had a skirt in the back of the closet. And I got to looking at it. It's got a zipper in it. Don't have no tag in it. So I don't know where the zipper goes. So I call my Al-Anon lady, right? Because she knows all that stuff. But she ain't home. The alcoholic's home. So the alcoholic said, "Oh, hell, Sandy, just put that zipper in the front like we do." So that's what I did. I went to court with that stupid zipper in the front. I can't imagine what I looked like. But I got first offender's probation, and I was able to 12-step the probation officer. I was able to pay my fees, you know, regular and on time. And about 7-8 years sober, I decided that lack of children is my dilemma. You know, because when you're in the South, or you're a woman, you don't have kids, they ask you what's wrong, right? Well, so I find a man who's got a couple, and I make his business my business, and, well, you know, I'm married with a couple of kids. I'm here to tell you, lack of children is not my dilemma. But on this marriage, I walked out way different. I didn't fly out on the handles of another man. You know, it was principles all the way, and it just wasn't a big mess. I didn't want to clean up any more of that. I was just done. I decided that, you know, obviously it's God's will for me because he talks about it in the book, but some people just meant to be left, live alone. So I'm good with that, and I started doing AA stuff just here and yonder, and a nosy neighbor corners me, and she said, I know somebody you need to meet. I'm going, you know what, no, because it was a man she wanted me to meet. And she said, but Sandy, he's going through a divorce, and he just come back from treatment, and he needs you. You know, we are all about service here, right? I mean, being of service to others, isn't that what we do? I said, okay, tell him to call me. I got in my car, and I drove off, and I didn't give him my phone number. Well, he's a telephone man. They have ways. So he came to my house that night. You know, he calls me, and he just lives like two houses down. So I said, oh, shoot, just come on up. I'll put on a pot of coffee, and I'm thinking, if he looks weird or I get some kind of weird feeling, I am so out of here. I'm going to lie like a dog, and I'm going to get in my car, and I'm leaving. Well, when he comes to the door, I opened it up, and I said, he's short. He is safe, and so am I. Because I was a short man, right? I mean, that's not... So, I mean, we just had a nice conversation and just got to be really good friends. So, things rocked on, and I fell in love with this guy. And, you know, I know me, and one more time, I know if I don't do something different, nothing's going to change. You know, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So I tell this guy, I said, you know, I like you and all that, but I need some time by myself. I need to do some work on me. And what I did was I done an inventory on my relationships at a level I had never done before. And what I found out is I'm a kicking, screaming two-year-old. I want everything my way. I want it now, and I don't want to share nothing. That is not basis for a successful relationship with anybody. So I asked God to take me to different, and I don't know what different is. You know, it always amazes me when I really don't know and I ask God to show me. He really does. You know, and I woke up one morning and I knew that I knew. And that day he called. He said, you know what, I need to talk to you. And I said, you know what, I need to talk to you too. And he was visiting friends, and when he got home, you know, we had a conversation and we've been together since. I told him that Alcoholics Anonymous was first in my life. I said, you're going to sit home a lot by yourself. And he said, Sandy, that'll be okay. And when he asked me to marry him, I said, I'll marry you one day at a time. One day at a time, I can act like I care. One day at a time, I can be a kind, loving wife. One day at a time, I can walk through the struggles that two people living under the same roof bring. You know, especially as we get older and things change and stuff, one day at a time. He said, you know what, I'll take it. You know, on July 2nd, we celebrated 23 years. It has not been easy. It has not been easy. I'm real spiritual when we got money. A couple of years after we got married, Wendell lost his job. So, you know, the sports car's got to go because you can't pay for it, you know, and all this other stuff. And my sponsor tells me, I got a woman sponsor at this time, and she's, you know, she's making me go to the meetings and tell y'all what's going on. I said, I'm not going to the meeting telling that Wendell lost his job and the bank's going to pick up this car because we can't pay for it. She said, well, Sandy, you've been sporting around that car for a little while. What you think they're going to happen to it? They don't think it's going to happen to it. You know? She said, you go tell them. So I go to the meeting and I tell y'all what's going on. And she said, it ain't about you, honey. It's about newcomers sitting in those meetings and understand that sometimes people lose their jobs and the toys have to go and you can get through it sober. You don't have to get drunk behind life events. And I'm going to tell you, I don't like being an example, but I'm one on a regular basis. So I go to the meeting, and she said, you tell all them girls, ask all them girls you're sponsoring to give you a ride to the meeting. Well, no, I am the bus driver. I make my little loop, I pick up all my girls, and we go to the meeting. I mean, you know, because I always get the girls that ain't got no job, no hopes of a job, no money, like I was when y'all got me. Just like me. I did the same thing. Hauled everywhere. Didn't have a car. I mean, That's the kind of girls I get. Where I get to give back what was given to me. You know? And you know what? All those women were so just honored to give me a ride and to help me. And one more time is that ego deflation at depth. And I hate it. I hate it. So Wendell gets a job in Idaho. Idaho, where are we going? To Idaho. And you know what? It snows in Idaho every year. I have seen snow about 3 times my whole life. So I call Intergroup office because that's where I go for my information. And I ask them where you take snow driving lessons. And he said, lady, most of us just get in the car. You know, and I go to Idaho and Alcoholics Anonymous is there. My sponsor told me how to get by the door, stick my hand out and pretend like I'm the newcomer. Now I'm in Idaho with some time. And she said, you can't tell nobody nothing until they ask you. They didn't ask me nothing. For months. And she said, you can't tell them nothing. They were doing it wrong. They were doing it wrong. They opened the meeting with a moment of silence, and they closed it with a serenity prayer. They don't say the Lord's Prayer there. I just knew they were all going to hell. You know, but Alcoholics Anonymous showed up. I started working with those newcomer girls coming in the door, and I showed them about the traditions. I took them through the big book like I was done. I took them through the concepts and that service manual like I was done. And I'm going to tell you, you know, we had a good time, and the sobriety in Idaho is good. So about this time, my mama gets sick. Now, my mama kicked me out when I was 13. I said she kicked me out. She said she told me that I couldn't drink under her roof. Same thing, right? So I hadn't lived with her in a long time. But she got to where she could take care of herself, and I said, well, come live with us. She said, I don't know. She's a little bit hesitant. But, you know, I've been doing like y'all had taught me to do and like I'd been sponsored to do. I paid the money back every week. Every month I wrote her a note and put money in it consistently every month. And she heard when I made my amends to her, what she wanted from me was for me to be happy. So every week when I called her, she heard me happy. And that's what I did. And I said, well, Mama, come out here for a week, and if you don't like it, we'll get you back home. And she said, all right. She come out to our house packed for a week. And we left her ashes in Idaho. You know, she stayed with us. I got to show her what a kind, loving daughter looked like. I got to show her. She got to meet y'all. She got to see what Alcoholics Anonymous looked like. My husband had a stroke, and y'all were there. And she got to see that. You know, and I'm going to tell you, our life changed when that happened. You know, but y'all have been there through that walk. I mean, y'all have been there through all those situations. And every time I just come and I show up and I tell you what's going on and I'm real about what's going on, and y'all are there. Wendell recovered from the stroke, except with a few minor things, and we're still, you know, working on that. And then he got transferred to New Mexico. Well, in New Mexico, AA was there one more time. We moved again to a bigger city. I hated it. I cried. Everything's brown. You know, the whole nine yards. But I've done just like I've always done. I got by that door. I stick my hand out. I'm a greeter. I don't tell them nothing. I don't tell them they're doing it wrong. I just start working with the newcomers, and I show them what has been shown to me. You know, same thing happened when I moved to Port Charlotte. The same thing happens. You know, my home group didn't have a greeter. I didn't ask him if I could be one. I just put my butt by the door and stuck my hand out, and I'm the greeter. You know, because it's important that I learn your name. Because you can stay sober without me, but I can't stay sober without you. I'm in New Mexico Port Charlotte for about a month. I'm just getting the swing of things. And I have a heart attack. Who would know? I have a heart attack without any insurance. Double whammy, you know, so now we're dealing with all of that. And I'm having a hard time getting back in the meetings after I get back home. So I have had the privilege of meeting a guy from Australia in these rooms. Now this guy from Australia, he went to Stuart, Florida to see a friend of ours. And then he drove across the state to come see me and Wendell. And I was telling them what a hard time I was having getting back in the meetings, because y'all didn't know me. You know, I hadn't got my little niche going, you know. We were talking about how hard it is to move. And I made a commitment to him that I would go to the meeting that next day, or that night. And I looked on a schedule and found the meeting, and I put it in my GPS because I don't know where stuff is. So I go out, and I go around one block. One block, and there's the meeting. Now, when I think God is not working in my life, I think that He brought a guy from Australia to my doorstep to get me to go one block. If my God is doing that for me, what is your God doing for you? Thank you.
Sandy, that's why I said first speaker. Sandy, Fourth Dimension would like to thank you. The basket in accordance with the seven traditions, so don't go yet. Yo, meeting's not over. I'd like to give Sandy another round of applause. I want to thank her for pointing out that I don't know different. I love that, because every day I do the same thing over and over and over, and if it becomes more confusing, it's scary.